The two sentences that I want to take out of each of our readings this morning are as follows. In the reading from Joel, and in verse 28, you can see it in your order of service. "And afterwards I will pour out my spirit on all people. Your sons and daughters will prophesy, your old men will dream dreams, your young men will see visions. Even on my servants, both men and women, I will pour out my spirit in those days." And then from the reading in 2 Timothy, "I have fought the good fight, I have finished the race, I have kept the faith." Familiar words and passages. I wonder what we might glean from them this morning. There is an ancient biblical proverb that says, "Where there's no vision, the people perish." Where there's no vision, the people perish. And I wonder to what extent such wisdom can apply to the world as we see it today. Whether that be the international events that we see on our TVs, whether it's the state of politics in whatever country you care to choose. It could equally apply to the world of economics, or to the response to climate change, or to the complex issues around refugees and immigration, even to where the church should be seeking to fulfill its ministry. Where there is no vision, the people perish. You see, the writer of that ancient Bible proverb understood that when our public life falters or fails, it's usually for a lack of vision. Perhaps in our own society, the vision problem, or more accurately, the acceptable and sustainable and agreed vision problem, has been well and truly exercised over these past few days. Without real solutions to pressing and increasingly urgent social, political and economic problems that treat fairly, compassionately and honourably all people, then the people are indeed perishing, both literally and spiritually. I don't know whether it will be the same this year, but certainly a year or two ago, when the Warm Rooms initiative took off because of the increased cost of heating, there was one Church of England vicar who was outside her church and being interviewed. That church acted as a food bank, it acted as a warm space for people, and a simple cafe. And she was explaining to the reporter, and she said without any sense of bitterness, but with real feeling, that whatever our political government was doing, that they didn't see it in that place. So many people were dropping through the net. Jesus refers to people in communities like these who have been left behind as the least of these. Where there is no vision, no guiding moral compass that steers our public life, whatever political party you support or don't support, whatever government is in power, we all suffer if there's no vision, if we don't have a sense of purpose. We become bereft of that meaning, bereft of that purpose. And you see, I think it means that we begin to lose a sense of the common good, or our shared humanity. And the bonds of humanity become so frayed that each individual feels forced to find it for themselves. And so the things that once joined us together as community begin to dissipate. And perhaps it's the poorest and the weakest among our society who are the least able to do that pay the greatest price. But the reality is, when there is no vision or purpose, whether that be in our country or in our churches, we are all diminished. We all suffer. Our passages this morning talk about the need for vision. A broad, inclusive, compassionate vision. About having something worth fighting for. Something worth defending. Something worth believing in. In our New Testament reading, Paul is in prison in Rome. He knows he is coming to the end of his life. He's no longer travelling around the Mediterranean. You might say his adventuring days are done. He is through with venturing on the high seas. He is through with walking the city streets and finding the odd job to support his itinerant ministry. And in a moment of vulnerability, Paul writes to Timothy, a young Christian leader in Ephesus, and he encourages Timothy to be steadfast and faithful, even in the most difficult of circumstances. I wonder sometimes, as the older we feel ourselves and know ourselves to be getting, whether we wonder what use do we have in society. And I think Paul highlights something for us. To be the encouragers. To be those who can encourage those coming behind us, whether those be our own children or families or those who are younger than us that we socialise with or have conversations with. To encourage people in their faith. To share our own story of faith and what that has meant to us. To share those times when faith was difficult, when God seemed far away, and yet we knew that he was still there. And perhaps that happened, that understanding happened some years down the line when we looked back at the difficult times. And I wonder if that's a little bit about what Paul is doing here. He's saying to Timothy, keep strong, be steadfast. As he looks back at his life, he says, I have fought the good fight and I have finished the race. Paul had learned in the school of hard knocks that when there are things in which you believe and are worth speaking about, you have to stand up for them. You have to be counted. And if needs be prepared to give an account of why you're fighting for that. But we know there are bad fights and good fights in life. There are fights you shouldn't pick and battles that you shouldn't pick. They're not worth the stand. They're not worth the fight. There are wrong causes to support and bad principles to espouse. And it says as true in religion as it is in politics, and it is as true in our own relationships. Maybe there are some of us here where perhaps there are relationships that need to be reconciled, and we've stood perhaps feeling bitterness and anger. And actually, life is too short. What is it that God might be calling us to think about if there are things in our lives that we have built our defences around, and actually we should be seeking God's love and grace and mercy? But there are good fights. There are causes where we should roll up our sleeves and get stuck in. There are principles that are worth defending. There are hard, long battles that need to be engaged, because the goals at the end, whether that be fairness or equality or truthfulness or peace, are worth the effort and worth the endurance. And we need to finish the race. We need to finish the race because to be a Christian is not about standing still. The gospel is not about standing still. It's about being en route. It's about being on a journey, however old we are, however old or young we are in the faith, however good or bad we feel, however worthy we feel. Being a Christian is about being on a journey and about understanding how God's love and grace and mercy and challenge impacts us on that journey. You see, we're called to be men and women, boys and girls, old and young, who have a vision for the future. Who have a vision for the future because of what Christ has done for us. And so I suppose the logical question from that point is, what kind of future? What are the things that are worth fighting for in our world today? What are the dreams of a better place that we hold dear and want to share and make happen Even if that is just in those small places around our own lives, our own families, that we can influence and alter. I thought about a few things. Perhaps we should want to live in a world where our Christian faith can be put to good use. After all, we're on a journey where the ideas which shape our faith, given to us by Jesus, his example and his words, and others in the Bible, don't just remain words or well-intended observations, but actually make a difference in our own lives, that maybe break into our own lives and into our world, so that people not only have hope to lift their spirits, but hope to inspire themselves into action, to run the race, to fight the good fight for causes that bring freedom and food and housing and clothing and medicine and education and compassion into the world. All these great things. But I wonder whether it has to start with us. We should be people who want to see God's love and mercy in our own lives, to understand what God's grace means for us. I think we should want to live in a world where discrimination is a thing of the past. Paul describes it in the sense of, it doesn't matter whether you're a Jew or a Gentile, slave or free, all are the same in God's eyes, loved and valued and respected because you're a child of God. We should want to live in a world where we see injustice eradicated. Where the injustices of older people without enough money to heat their homes, or working parents without enough money to feed themselves and their children, or schools where giving of education has been overtaken by the need to ensure school children have had something to eat, or charities and churches desperately trying and not always succeeding to plug gaps in social care and welfare that rightly belong to the state to provide. You see, part of God's vision was for his people and his church to champion the causes that he has championed all through Scripture. The cause of the orphan and the widow, the leper and the enslaved, the person on the edges and on the fringes. You see, I wonder if we begin to lose all sense of common good, of purpose and of perspective when we forget that that is the God who draws us together. The God of the people on the edge or the fringe, the orphan and the widow, the leper and the enslaved. What does that mean for us today, here in St. Andrews, in Aldershot, or wherever we might have travelled from? We need to try and apply this to our own situation and lives. We should want to live in a world where to hope is to learn about God's dream, to perhaps reread these passages when we go home and to ask God to enable us to understand what that means for us, where we are, in our lives, in our community, and then to begin to live it, even just one small step at a time. Where hope is learning to dream and then to act, to fight the good fight for a good cause and to run the long race and to be faithful, hopeful and loving, because that's simply what we are and who we are. And we should do it without shame or embarrassment in the fact that this way is inspired by our belief in Christ and in his teachings. What might it mean to recapture that sense of vision? What might it mean to recapture that sense of God working in and through our own lives? A number of years ago, when the Reverend Dr. Derek Browning was the moderator, he spoke about a visit he made to the Ukrainian Catholic Church in Leith in Edinburgh. And he recounts and says the 2-hour service was in Ukrainian with some English for his own benefit. And he was asked to say a few words at the end to bring greetings and to say that though he knew so many of the people in that church that night were present in body, that their hearts and souls were back in their fearful, bombed, broken homeland. And he went on to say to them that it was a privilege for the Church of Scotland, along with so many others, to offer even a little help. The service finished, and at the end of the evening, an older lady came up to him with her priest. She hadn't been in Edinburgh long, and with her priest as an interpreter, she said to him, "You say you have done little, but it is much. You help us keep our dream alive. You help us fight the good fight for a better homeland and a return in peace. And though the road is long and hard, and not all will return, you say you have done little, but it is much." How are we to know the impact of our words? How are we to know the impact of our smile on that morning, or our helping hand, or our word of encouragement, or our move to reconcile? There are many causes that we can take up and support to regain a vision and a purpose, perhaps. Maybe this morning it's a challenge to us as an individual before we think about what challenge we might take up in the world. But whatever it is, ask God to speak to you through his still small voice. Perhaps to think about something that speaks to you specifically, that moves you, that maybe upsets you and challenges you, and then think how you might fight for it. The good fight that Paul writes about. And when you come to the end of your days, just as Paul was getting, you may with honest pride look back and perhaps worry that you did too little, but discover in faith that actually you did much.